Okay, let's open up our Bibles to Matthew 25, please, and we'll start there. Glad you're here. We want to talk about taking the initiative tonight, and we will start in Matthew 25. When Jesus is describing the judgment day, starting in verse 31, and he talks about kind of a simplistic, non-comprehensive view of the judgment, and notice in verse 44, then they themselves also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you? And then he will answer them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. These will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. So these examples are not of people who did something wrong. It's of people who just didn't do. And so they failed to take the initiative. They failed to act. So these were sins of omission. So let's talk about initiative tonight. Let me just start with a question. What does that mean? You hear the word initiative, and that's one of those words, maybe we kind of know what it means, but it's hard to put it into words. So let's try to do that. Let's try to put it in your own words. If someone takes the initiative, what do we mean when we say that? Why?
Without prompts.
Okay, that's a good way to describe it. Acts without prompts, okay? You know, it's when you have the opportunity to do something and then you just go ahead and do it without someone having to tell you, without someone having to prompt you. Initiative. Zeal doesn't exactly capture it, but just somebody who's a go-getter, a self-starter, all those kind of words pertain to what we're talking about tonight. So I can be really good at sitting in a pew, and I can be really good at not doing bad things, but that's not what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about those who take the initiative and go do what needs to be done. Have I been doing that in my life? We want to talk about that tonight. Okay, any comments, any questions, any additions as we begin? Angel?
I mean, it says see a need, fill a need.
Okay, see a need, fill a need. Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about tonight. Look in Acts chapter 17. And we'll take Paul as an example here. If we're not interested, we'll never take action. In other words, one of the keys to being someone who takes initiative is to care, is to get interested, is to learn about a need, learn about what's going on, and take an interest in that. And I told you to turn to Acts 17. Hold your place because I forgot we're going to start in Romans 5. So hold your place in Acts 17. Romans 5. I want to start with the best example, which is God. Romans 5 and verse 8, God demonstrates his own love toward us and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So there's God taking the initiative. Nothing we did that earned it, that deserved it, but God himself takes the initiative. Why did he do that? Because he's interested in our souls. He loves our souls. He cares about our souls. And he saw the need that was there, and knowing that we couldn't do anything by ourselves about it, God takes action. So God took initiative. So he, of course, every week we're saying the same thing, but he's the best example of all these good qualities that we're talking about. Okay, now look in Acts chapter 17. Paul's a good example here. Acts 17, Paul's coming through Athens in the second half of chapter 17, and he ends up preaching this sermon on Mars Hill on Areopagus, and just notice how that got started. Read verses 15 through 17. So I'm in Acts 17, 15. Now those who escorted Paul brought him as far as Athens, and receiving a command for Silas and Timothy to come to him as soon as possible, they left. Now, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, his spirit was being provoked within him as he observed the city full of idols. So he was reasoning in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Gentiles and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be present. And so it goes back and forth there, and then verse 22, he stands up and starts preaching that sermon. So Athens was just a stopping point on his journey. He's on the way somewhere else. It's a stopping point, but you see what gets him going, verse 16. His spirit's provoked as he just looks around and all those idols are everywhere. So he's interested enough in that error and all the false gods that are being promoted there that he wants to say something about it. And that's how all of this begins. So this wasn't even his initial goal. This wasn't his destination. He's just stopping through, and it ends up being a place where he takes initiative because he cares. And as an inspired apostle, then he's able to make the most of that opportunity. Look in Ezra chapter 9. So I'm just trying to get several examples before us of those who took initiative. And then we're going to try to see if we can piece together some clues and some common qualities of these folks and their ability to take the initiative. The first one we're trying to notice is just people that care. Ezra 9, I used Ezra as an example not too long ago in a sermon, and we made pretty much a similar point that I'm about to make here. This is Ezra 9, and in verse 1, now when these things had been completed, the princes approached me saying, the people of of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the peoples of the lands according to their abominations, those of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Egyptians, and the Amorites. For they've taken some of their daughters as wives for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy race is intermingled with the peoples of the lands. Indeed, the hands of the princes and the rulers have been foremost in this unfaithfulness. Okay, so that's what you have. They just come tell Ezra that. And then his reaction, verse 3, when I heard about this matter, I tore my garment and my robe and pulled some of the hair from my head and my beard and sat down appalled. Then everyone who trembled at the words of the God of Israel on account of the unfaithfulness of the exiles gathered to me, and I sat appalled until the evening offering. But at the evening offering, I arose from my humiliation, even with my garment and my robe torn, and I fell on my knees and stretched out my hands to the Lord my God. And so it goes on from there. He prays to God, and chapters 9 and 10 tell the story of him dealing with this intermarriage sin that they were deeply involved in. But I want us just to emphasize, how did it all start? It wasn't a prophet coming to Ezra and saying, you need to do this. It wasn't God with a voice through the clouds telling Ezra to do something, which either one of those would have been fine. It was just Ezra. He learns, the people tell him, here's the problem. And you see his sincere reaction there in verses 3 and 4. He can't stand it to find out that this is the spiritual situation there. And then he deals with, I think, the most emotional and tough problem anybody could ever deal with, which is talking about people's families and people's marriages. But he does it because he cares. And by the way, it also mentions other people there trembled at the words of the God of Israel. They cared too, and they were going to support him in that. So I think there's we're picking up a common theme. The ones who took initiative, Paul in Athens, Ezra in Ezra chapter 9, they just care. I don't know how else to describe it. They're just interested in that. It bothers them that there is sin, and so they want to do something about that. It bothers them that God's truth has been violated, that here's people that are living in sin, and thus their soul is condemned, and they care enough about that to take some action. And so that's where really we need to start, is just caring. If I'm not taking initiative in spiritual things, one of the reasons might be I just don't care enough. And that's a sad commentary on me and hopefully an impetus that I need to start caring more. I need to get more spiritually minded and just care enough to take action. Okay, let me pause there. Any observations you have, anything to add as we move along here? Ma'am?
I think with Sodom and Gomorrah and how many times he went to God in prayer with however many people, if this many people believe what you say,
right,
you save it, and all the way down until got to the number 10, I believe.
That's another good example. Abraham cared for those people. Of course, Lot's down there, nephew Lot, but he just cares about people, and he's trying to help. And that brings up another good example of Moses, when all the times he interceded for the people, trying to help, and when they certainly didn't deserve it, they were sinful and mean against Moses. Okay, anything else so far, Corey?
Teenagers, or you can see the opposite with teenagers, right? I mean, there could be a mess right in front of them that they made on the island, and they have no idea. I mean, that's how mine are. It's like, did you not see what you just did, right?
Yeah.
But no care to clean it up because they didn't even see it, right? And that's they're not interested in the cleaning side of things, or they've got mom and dad to do that, you know? And so it's that, you know, it's almost like you have to be trained and practice recognizing, right?
Okay.
To be interested, right? And so you do have to open your eyes, and you have to be trained differently to recognize these needs, to recognize when something needs to be done.
Okay.
And adults, we have that problem too, right? I mean, a lot of times, or someone offering to help you, no, I don't need help. Well, how do we know that person hadn't been praying to help? You know, God, give me some opportunities. I need to be better at helping. And we turn them away. We say, no, we don't need anything. Really, we do need help with something, okay. Right? I mean, there's times when we cut someone's initiative off, or we don't even see it, and we have to be trained. I don't know how you're trained, but interest is one thing that you've got to get better at, interest in helping, but in what? There's so many different ways to help and to be encouraging and to care and love others.
That's a good point.
How do we get there? I mean, I know how to beat it over my kids to clean it up, but that doesn't mean they're going to be better at it. I don't want to be their roommates in college, right?
Oh, we're all going to be smiling at them when they walk in the building here after a while. But that's right. You're hitting on this. We have to get ourselves in that habit of noticing in ourselves and others the needs that are there. And that's right. And that's just part of training ourselves to be more spiritually minded and noticing needs. And it makes me think of an old preacher's advice to a young preacher. You know, what do I preach on? If you can't figure out what to preach on this week, preach to hurting people. There's one on every pew. And it's the idea of just we need to just notice what's always been there that maybe we're just not taking notice of. Okay, great points. That's a practical way to look at this. Anything else to add so far? We should care about. So this is something, I mean, it's not like we need to do our best not to get to the point where sin doesn't bother us anymore. Now, sin's everywhere. We live in the world, after all. But we're doing our best not to become callous to that. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, Proverbs 8:13. Abhor what is evil, Romans 12 and verse 9. And so we're trying to be like Ezra. And when he hears about this, he just can't believe it. Just tearing his hair out, literally, apparently, because he's so upset. Look in 1 Samuel 17. One more good example is the classic story, David and Goliath. And you think about how David, I mean, killing Goliath is great, but just the initiative to go and do that is what I want to emphasize. 1 Samuel 17:3. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side of the valley between them. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. In verse 10, again the Philistines said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Verse 16, the Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand. So nothing's happening. Everything's at a standstill as Goliath issues this challenge day by day. And, of course, remember, King Saul looked great as a king. Big old tall guy back in chapter 9 and verse 2. Choice man, not a more handsome person among all the sons of Israel from the shoulders up. He was taller than any of the people. So he looked great, but here was time to fight. And at least in this case, he's not doing it. So what sets the whole thing in motion? Verse 26, back in 1 Samuel 17:26. Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? So there's David's attitude. He just can't believe it. Nobody's going out to fight this guy. God's on our side, and this uncircumcised guy's coming around. How dare he taunt this army like that? And so he just figures, well, I'll go do it. And how easy it would have been. Nobody's expecting David to do a thing. In fact, his older brothers especially are kind of perturbed that David wants to get involved. But he's the one that takes the initiative out of everybody there to go and do this. And, of course, the rest is history. Down in verse 46, this day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there's a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So just some great faith on display there from David. The battle's the Lord's. He's giving credit to God, but David is the one here taking initiative. So several good examples. Paul, Ezra, David, good examples of those who were taking initiative, and it started with them just being interested in what was going on. Whatever the situation was. Here's something needs fixing, and so I'm going to step up and fix it. They cared about God. They cared about his word. They cared that sin was being promoted. Here's something that stands against God, and they want to do something about it. So that's what I think we can learn, first of all, about initiative. We just have to get interested so that we will be motivated to take initiative. Okay, I have a question to ask you, but let me just pause. Anything to add so far? Questions, comments? Kyle?
Yeah, I was just thinking about
this is practicing, learning, trying to figure out a way to put yourself out of the equation, meaning how is this going to affect me? How is this going to affect my family? How is this going to affect my job? How is this going to affect my life? It has to be, that has to be put out of the way. You have to be free to take the action that, you know, maybe in your heart or whatever you know you need to take. But if you have those things, this life, money, holding you back from just doing what you know you need to do, then a lot of times people just get stuck analyzing. You know, how is this going to affect this? How is this going to affect that? And so really, like one of the mottos in the military was selfless service. I mean, you had to learn to put yourself out of the equation, your life, your family, your kids, while you were off somewhere in a strange place doing something dangerous, you had to learn to put all that off. And you had to focus on what was going on. And it's tough, and it takes practice. You know, that's why the military trains a lot. So I think that's what we have to do in our lives, spiritually speaking, dealing with, you know, problems in the world and with our kids and all those kinds of things. It has to be something we mentally go through every day intentionally so that when we get faced with something, we've prepared for it. Okay. If you don't prepare for it, when you get there, you may do the right thing, but you may not.
That's a great analogy to the
military mindset and the training that's necessary there. Otherwise, you would just hesitate and hesitate, and nobody would ever do anything, especially anything dangerous. Okay, it's a great thing to think about. Mark?
To add to this point, I think there's something that can happen, at least I feel like it's happened to me in the past, where you feel like if you realize the need, if you open your eyes up to that, then your conscience is going to bother you and you have to do something about it. But as long as you can ignore it somehow, then you don't have to do anything about it. Okay. So you have to get past that and be okay with taking on the responsibility that comes with seeing those needs and being able to do something.
Yeah, okay. Great point.
Well, let me ask this question. Can we list a few things that we ought to care about? Like, if we want to get specific, what are we talking about? We got to care about things. What spiritual things are we talking about that ought to concern us, that ought to provoke us to action? Does anything come to mind? I'll give you an example. How about the spiritual track our kids are on? Should we care about that? Oh, yeah, big time. In fact, maybe that's one that comes more naturally to us, as parents at least. We care very much about that, and when we see it going off track, we're probably quick to jump into action. So are there some other things that we can think of off the top of our heads? What should we be caring about? What ought we to be sensitizing ourselves to so that when something's awry in that category, I'm inclined to take action? Teresa?
People cannot attend as often as others. When you cannot attend, you miss the edification and the encouragement of the congregation.
Okay.
So it is useful for those people to get a visit, a personal visit, and say, I just want to come see you and see how you're doing, and encourage them in private when they can't come.
Okay. That's a great example.
So noticing who's maybe falling by the wayside, maybe it's not medical stuff, it's just some spiritually slipping away and attending to that. That's a great example. Kaylin, did you have your hand up?
I think that we should care about God's law, and I say that because I think that in my generation, a lot of Christians are very caught up in, you know, the love and peace and like the pretty nice parts of the gospel, you know, and we sometimes forget about obeying God's law and knowing what God's law is, and, you know, focusing on things like authority, which may not be as, you know, butterflies, that kind of feeling stuff. So I think we should care about God's law, because God said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments, and most of us really don't know what God has
given. Okay, exactly right. And Ezra,
a great example of that. Here was a part of God's law for Israel that was sticky and emotional, and he got right in the middle of all that. That's a great example. That's exactly what we ought to be doing. Okay, anything else come to mind, Brent?
Maybe take a little different look at it. I can think of a few few different examples, and it's true of all of us, I would think, where there's something that you know needs to be done, and something that's good, and something that's helpful, and you can figure out reasons to not do it, but you know it's the right thing to do, and sometimes you just need to make the decision, whatever the ramifications, whatever the cost, be it financial or physical or time or whatever, I'm just going to do it. And just as example, you know, if one of us, let me use myself as an example. If I was, in a car wreck on the side of the road or whatever, and I couldn't go anywhere, I would call one of y'all and say, can you come get me? And I would hope that, you know, whatever was going on, you'd say, I need to help my brother, and just do it. That's the right thing to do. Whatever else is going on, you know, that's just the right thing to do. And I think very often when we see things that need to be done, sometimes we just need to, even though it may be an inconvenience, we need to say, that's the best thing to do, and that's just the right thing to do. And whatever the ramifications, who cares? You know, and it, you know, maybe a little bit of a mindset. You know, I can think of a few things in my life, and I hope the rest of us can, where you just think, okay, this may be inconvenient, but this is what I should do. And it goes back to being interested. You know, this is where my interest should be.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Here's the priority. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Let me read this quote, and then we'll move on to the next point. This is from, I looked up how to pronounce his name. I think it's Elie Wiesel. It looks like Eli Wiesel when I see it on the paper. But this was the guy, he was a Jew, born in 1928. He was in Auschwitz and Buchenwald, the concentration camps during World War II. His parents died. One of his sisters just died. He and two older sisters survived. They were liberated in 1945. So he lived, he's a Holocaust survivor, wrote 57 books, talked about the Holocaust the rest of his life, made lots of speeches, famous person. And one of the points that he always brought up was just how he couldn't believe that people during the Holocaust could see what was going on and not stop it. That they could see one human treat another like that and not do something, take the initiative to stop it. And the quote that came out of that was, he said, indifference to me is the epitome of evil. And I just thought that's interesting from his perspective, especially to see just maybe people that otherwise would have stood up for something that's good, and yet there were enough that did not take the initiative. And that's what allowed something like the Holocaust to take place, this horrible evil and a blight on our history. So we got to care enough to take action. Look at this next point. Rally others to the cause when possible. It's not always possible. That'll be the third point. But when possible, do that. So look at Nehemiah. Nehemiah is the master of this. Let's just go remind ourselves of some of those events for a minute. Nehemiah chapter 1. Remember that Nehemiah was living in captivity in a city called Susa in the Persian Empire almost 100 years before. The king of Persia had told all the Jews they could come back to the homeland if they want. They could rebuild and do all that. But a lot of them were still living in foreign lands. And so Nehemiah is one of those who's still living in a foreign land. He's cupbearer to the king. And then Nehemiah hears about the condition of Jerusalem, and he's upset. So that goes back to our first point, that he cares about the condition of Jerusalem, the conquered capital city. Nehemiah 1:1, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Now, it happened in the month of Chislev in the 20th year while I was in Susa, the capital, that Hanani and I, one of my brothers, and some men from Judah came, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped and had survived the captivity and about Jerusalem. They said to me, the remnant there in the province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach, and the wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates are burned with fire. When I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days, and I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. So there again is our example. A lot like Ezra's reaction, just sit down, just can't believe that, you know, after all these years of returned captives, that the city of Jerusalem is still in that condition. And he wants to get personally involved. Chapter 2 and verse 5, I said to the king, if it please the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. And so the king is favorable to that request. He gets permission to go to Jerusalem. He rallies the people when he gets to Jerusalem to rebuild the wall around the city. Skip to chapter 2 and verse 15. So I went up at night by the ravine and inspected the wall. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done, nor had I as yet told the Jews, the prophets, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest who did the work. Then I said to them, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach. I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me and also the king's word which he had spoken to me. Then they said, let us arise and build. And so they put their hands to the good work. And then we won't read chapter 3, but you can just kind of scan your eyes down chapter 3 as he's listing the people. This family worked on this section of the wall. This guy worked on this section of the wall and so forth. And then as the opposition comes in chapter 4, Nehemiah kind of has to rally the troops again. Let's get through this. Let's be prepared to fight if we have to. Nehemiah 4:4, hear, O our God, how we are despised, return their reproach on their own heads, and give them up for plunder in the land of captivity. Do not forgive their iniquity, and do not let their sin be blotted out before you, for they have demoralized the builders. So we built the wall, and the whole wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. In verse 14, when I saw their fear, I rose and spoke to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. Verse 17, those who were rebuilding the wall and those who carried burdens took their loads with one hand doing the work and the other hand holding a weapon. And then in chapter 6 and in verse 15, that well-known verse, the wall was completed on the 25th of the month of Elul in 52 days. So Nehemiah shows up to town. I mean, it's been 100 years since exiles can come back. Nehemiah comes to town and gets done in 52 days. So someone came and took initiative, and he didn't do it himself, but he rallies everybody together, and they rebuild the wall in what is one of the great stories that we have in the Old Testament. So great lesson to be learned there in recruiting others and just being kind of the one that just gets the ball rolling, and then others join in. And a lot of times, that's just the way it works. People are willing and able to do something. It's just nobody's taking the first step. And if one person will do it, then others are happy to jump in. And that's the situation here in Nehemiah's day. Now, sometimes you just have to go do it yourself. We looked at David in the last point, and nobody's doing anything. And so David jumps in, and he fights Goliath. Now, once Goliath's dead, they were happy to jump in. And you know, remember, they chased the Philistines and all of that good stuff. But David was on his own. His brothers were annoyed with him, fellow Israelites standing around, King Saul himself, dismayed and greatly afraid. And so David just had to act. So we can't always rally others. Sometimes we just have to do it. But when we can, if we can get others involved, obviously that's a good thing. Take the initiative in that way. So here's Nehemiah rebuilding the wall, organizes the people. Come on, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. And later when they become afraid, again, he rallies them again. Don't forget the Lord who's great and awesome. And he just kind of inspires that courage in everybody. And just awesome lesson and example of leadership there. But if Nehemiah had tackled that project alone, I guess theoretically anything's possible, but that would have been a long time. Anybody that's built a fence knows it would have been a really big job to build a wall around. And, of course, Jerusalem was small back then. They say it was about 4,000 cubits, so just over a mile of wall that they're building. But that's a lot of wall if you start moving rocks. And so people get involved and the work gets done. So sometimes taking the initiative means being the leader to get others to work also. And if others don't, well, so be it. Here's something that needs to be done anyway, and I'll just do what I can do. Okay, let me pause there. Anything to add, comments? I'm going to go read that passage we have in Ecclesiastes 4. But Brother Witt?
There's a study some years back that looked into a situation of a crowd that stood around a man who attacked a young lady in Central Park, New York, assaulted her sexually while the crowd stood around and watched, and nobody did anything. So they did some serious study on it, behavioral scientists, and they decided that basically nobody acts until somebody acts. If one person in the crowd had done something, the whole crowd would have taken action. So the next thing here, even if you're alone, take action. You may not find yourself alone once you get into the act.
Okay. That's a sad, sad story. But you can see that. And I think that's happened numerous times where everybody's thinking, what's going on? Why is nobody doing anything? And so you just don't do anything. You're just wondering. That's an interesting thing. It's like a sociology experiment. And Yeah, the power of one person taking action. Good example. Okay, Kaylin?
I think, you know, everybody's probably having the thought of like, man, somebody should really do something. And I think something that is significant about the story of Nehemiah in chapter 3 when it's talking about who's doing what, like who's making repairs where, in various verses, like in verse 8, it talks about how there's goldsmiths and perfumers. And I just thought that was really interesting that it says what these people's occupation was. And it has nothing to do with, like, construction, building a wall.
Okay.
But they stepped up to what needed to be done. And so
okay.
instead of thinking, man, somebody that's in construction should be building this wall, they stepped up and did it. And so whatever the situation is, instead of, man, someone should really, maybe you should.
Okay, great point.
Not let them do it. Let us do it.
Okay. Yeah, great point. This is not my job or expertise, but I'm just going to do what I can do. Great observation. Ara?
What I was thinking was, you know, Satan doesn't have to turn us to evil to be successful. He just has to lock us up in paralysis of inaction or silence us or keep the Bible within the walls of our church building or the walls of our homes. As long as he silences us in those different ways, he's successful.
That's exactly right. And that's scary how little he has to do to be successful in shutting us down. Doesn't have to uproot our faith, just we're too busy, we're just too lazy, whatever it is. Okay? Keith?
Really, what's being said right here kind of goes against finding something of interest to take action. Instead, it's taking action. You find the interest in doing the good. Small story. JR called me when we were in college. He goes, hey, so-and-so needs a new roof on their house. We got to do it fast. We did it. We got up on that roof. We told jokes. We did Red Green jokes. Red Green was a popular show on PBS back then, clean comedy. And one of the guys that we never really heard talk at church was hilarious that night. He dies a year later.
Wow.
Well, I asked myself a lot, why? And I believe God puts us in situations for helping others, to be able to build up others. In the last year, I accidentally ran across his dad and did a remodel job for him. It was purely on the job. We're talking, and I find out this is David's dad. Skyler, who comes here, brought him one night. Seeds get planted early for a crop. It takes a while sometimes for that plant to grow. But we can't doubt that God's actions in our lives. And sometimes it's just a small action.
Never know where something's going to lead. That's a good point. Where God's providence might be putting us in a certain place at a certain time. Let me hit this last point before we run out of time tonight. Even if we're alone, take action. Sometimes you just got to step up and do it. Look in Luke chapter 10, please. In verse 27, here's the story of the Good Samaritans, what we're looking at. Luke 10, 27 is the setup. He answered, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and all your mind, your neighbors, yourself. And he said to him, you have answered correctly, do this and you will live. But wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? You know, that's a question maybe we ask sometimes. We want to somehow limit our obligation to others and what we're supposed to do. And that's what this guy's doing. And, of course, for all time, it's his bad attitude is recorded there in verse 29. He's trying to justify himself. And so Jesus' response is the story of the Good Samaritan. And here's this man that needs help, and the Samaritan is the one that helps him. And then in verse 36, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands? And he said, the one who showed mercy toward him. So here's the one that took the initiative to do something. Nobody else is doing anything, and the Samaritan does it. And Jesus, of course, is commending that kind of attitude and action towards others. So Jesus, by the way, is answering the question kind of backwards. The guy is asking, who's my neighbor that I need to go love my neighbor? And Jesus answers by saying, who proved to be a neighbor? And so the point is just go out and just do good to people. Just be a good neighbor to folks. But you see that lesson there. Just go out and take the initiative. What am I capable of doing? I might have to stretch myself and do things that are inconvenient and do things I'm not. As Kaylin pointed out, this is not my specialty or something, but it's an opportunity for me to do something. And again, think back to David and Goliath. Nobody's expecting David to do anything. I think we can pretty much guarantee that day. And there was a lot of other people who should have been doing something that weren't. But David didn't let that stop him. He just thinks, well, why not me? You know, I'll just go out there and do it. I fought a bear before, so why not this guy? You know, he just does it. And Nehemiah, the same thing. Nehemiah's about 1,000 miles away. So, you know, Brent talked a minute ago. We come up with all kinds of excuses why we can't or shouldn't or maybe should wait. Nehemiah's 1,000 miles away, and he thinks, I need to go fix that wall. And he does. I mean, that's initiative right there. What a good example. So a lot of times that's going to be the case where there are others in a position who can do the thing or should be doing the thing. And for whatever reason, they're not. And maybe we just get stuck on, well, they should be doing this thing. Instead of us finally just stepping up and saying, well, I can do this. And not being bitter and bad attitude and rolling our eyes and, you know, all that kind of stuff towards the one who should have been doing it. I'm just going to step up and do what I ought to do. And throw a caveat in there. Sometimes it is appropriate for certain people to do certain things or have certain talks. And I understand that. And that's part of our, that's a judgment call. We're trying to make that judgment call, but we're trying to be wise and not lazy. And so there might be some things that are just appropriate for some to handle or whatever. But a lot of times maybe we just tell ourselves that when we're just being lazy and we're just not taking the initiative. So if it's somebody that needs checking on in the congregation and we think, well, you know, really the preacher should be doing it, the elder should be doing it, somebody else, but I can do that. And it's just a matter of me deciding to do it. I care enough and I want to do this. Or whatever the thing is, does someone need advice? Does someone need help? Somebody need an extra dose of love? They've had a hard time recently. Does a coworker need encouragement? On all these spheres of influence in which I live, is there something I can do? Why not me, even if no one else is doing it? Angel?
In James 4:17, it says, therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we recognize that we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. If I live without that understanding, in that context there in James 4, that's wrong. I need to understand that. Okay? Anything to add as we got a couple minutes left here? Any comments, questions, ma'am?
One thing is to not hesitate and to do things immediately, because a lot of times you'll think about something and, well, you can put it off and you hesitate. But if you do things immediately, you're going to be more likely to do them.
Okay.
And it's going to be the better thing to do.
Okay.
You know, sometimes people say, if you need something done, give it to somebody who's busy already. And they just, I don't have time to wait. I just need to do it now. Brent?
We need to be careful not to ask ourselves what we have to do, but what we can do.
Okay. Great point. And Good Samaritan's a good example of that. Here's something I can do, ought to do. Angel?
It's hard whenever you're trying to explain to your kids that, you know, sometimes you may be the only one that will stand up for the right thing.
Okay.
Whether that's at school or at other places. And they have to understand sometimes that they may be the only one that's willing to do that.
Okay.
And school might be a great place to try this out and to mature by noticing that sometimes when I stand up, there's some supporters there. Sometimes. Who were thinking the same thing as me and just were afraid to act. Okay. Alyssa?
Throughout your whole lesson, I just kept thinking back to when I was at camp last summer, and it was a Christian-based camp, and they just taught us a lot about through this. We studied Mark the whole month, and they just talked a lot about spiritual integrity and just doing the right spiritual thing even when it doesn't feel right, like, or it doesn't feel like it's going to be accepted by your peers the right way. That doesn't matter at all. And then just even when no one's paying attention to you, your spiritual integrity matters the most.
Okay, great point. Yeah, that goes along perfectly with this.
Great point. In fact, it's a good way to end our class tonight. Thank you for your attention this evening. We'll cut it off right there.